Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome back. Today, I'm going to give my predictions for 2025. I'm recording this in early December, and as always, every year, I like to do my predictions, just record a video of what I got right, what I got wrong in 2024, based off of what I predicted a year ago. And if you haven't seen that, I gave myself an overall B. I was floating B minus, and then when I went back and looked at some predictions on mortgage rates, which I was probably against the grain on some of those areas, I hit that one pretty well. So I'll give my predictions for interest rates, home pricing, loan defaults, and areas of concern that I would have as an investor going into 2025. So let's get started. And first, I will say this is interesting because we have a new administration coming in, which has been in party previously, but I'm not sure anybody knows what is going to happen. And the markets did predict, I'd say, favorably based on the decision. Not saying I agree with that, or I'm not putting any political spin on this. I'm actually down the middle independent, so honestly don't like either party. But let me say it's a little more challenging because of the unknown. But I'm going to look at things from a macro level and maybe dive in a little bit to the micro level. But let me first start by talking interest rates. And I'm looking at the interest rate environment, and people probably are not going to like this, but I'm not going to predict a significant decrease in interest rates. I think where the government is with the amount of money they printed, what people were willing to pay for our bonds, which are 10-year treasuries, which are tied to interest rates, the stock market has been hot, so people have been not really flexing into the bond market to make it competitive. It's left interest rates high. I would not be surprised if they get into the fives. I don't believe that they will get into the fours unless we see a significant economic retraction, whether we have significant job loss, significant home price decline, significant market declines, and people look for a less risk-averse alternative and get back into the bonds, which would potentially decrease the interest rates. But I think the free markets will play out. And as somebody who bought their first home in 2001, which was at 6%, and my wife in, I want to say, 2005 or 6, her interest rate, I think, was close to 8 when she bought her townhouse. For a lot of younger people, that's the norm. 5% is great. 6%, 7%, that's kind of been the norm. And I think we're going to shift a little bit back more towards that norm, unfortunately, unless there is some significant economic news that causes stress to the markets. So people are probably not going to like that, but I think that's where rates are going to end up. When we talk in a year from now, if I had to pin a number, I'd say between 5.25 and 6.5. So they might come back down 0.75 point or a point. I think when I checked my credit union, which actually I can check right now, I could get a mortgage on conforming 30-year fixed at 5.875 with 2.6 points, an APR of 6.1%. So somewhere floating right around, you know, if there were no points, they would probably be 6.25. maybe half point decline. I think they might come down slightly, but again, I don't think they're going to come to the point where people want them to get to. Now, let's play that into the next topic, which is home prices. And I have, say, probably wrong last year, where I thought I'd see more softening in home prices. I think we have seen it in markets like Texas and Florida, where we have seen some drops and some softening. I know in Kansas City, for example, they have seen, because I have no investor there, some significant price cuts in those markets. Now, home prices, again, are a price today isn't really getting reported for 4 to 6 months down the road. And year over year might show today, okay, it's still up slightly. I'm having a hard time believing that if we look at pricing from the peak, which was, I think, 21 or 22 or whenever it was, where we're going to end next year, I'm thinking it's going to be 15% lower from the peak. Median price home. Now, that's not a crash. That's not good. But Chris, why, someone asked, why are you thinking that? And I'm a numbers guy. As a numbers guy, I look at where I think mortgage rates are going to be. What's it cost to own a home today? When you factor in taxes, when you factor in insurance, when you factor in, we just had a quote to replace an HVAC system, and it was equivalent to what we paid to have our whole entire house ducted and two systems put in place 10 years ago. So everything is getting significantly more expensive in owning and operating a home. And it comes to a point of people listening, how much is your pay increased over the last 4 years compared to your cost of goods and services? Most people are going to say it has not kept up. And when we look at data of credit card debt has gone up over $1 trillion. I mean, it's over $1 trillion, excuse me, hasn't gone up by a trillion. It's over $1 trillion today. Those rates are enormously high. People, I think, are struggling and their savings are being depleted. And when I talk about where I see defaults going, we'll talk a little bit more about how, what that looks like. But essentially, something's got to give. And I've mentioned this in the past. You've got everyone under 30 today. How many of those people can go out and buy a home today based off of mortgage rates and home values? And one of the best ways that people have been able to create wealth over time has been through real estate, because it's typically will follow inflation. So if you buy in a good location, people who bought, you know, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. I know when I was building condos 10 years ago, people bought houses in the 80s for $100,000 and were selling them for $2.5 million now 30 years later. It's a nice bump and, you know, nice growth and get that play. If you can't get into real estate, you can't get that. And people who've been in real estate for 10 years, like myself with my primary residence, I'm happy with what the numbers look like today. But if I was starting out and looked at where I am financially today, I couldn't buy my house for what it's worth today and get a mortgage on it, nor would I want to. I could afford my neighbor's house, which is half the size of mine. And again, I'm not bragging about it, but I'm just saying, you know, your buying power today is like half what it was several years ago. So I think that eventually it's going to have to soften and it's going to come down. And that's where I spitball. I just say 15%. I have no idea. And again, certain markets are going to be much worse off than others. Again, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. This market is typically more resistant because of the federal government and the number of jobs we have. But who knows if they cut jobs, will that have an impact? But typically the markets that see the greatest spike up typically also see the greatest spike down. And they get back to a median or normal, you know, growth cycle. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but that's where I'm going with that. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you. Next is defaults. And I was looking at some recent data, the New York Fed, that they just released, and it's pretty interesting what they're showing. And they've got serious delinquencies essentially are back to where they were pre-COVID. So during COVID, delinquency rates were floating just under 4. They went down to probably under 3. And now they're back up close to 4. So if you look at every chart that has been put out there regarding delinquencies, debt, and everything else, it's basically you're seeing everything got suppressed down to the good during COVID. And now we're back to where we are pre-COVID, with the exception of credit card debt, which has skyrocketed. So one interesting one is mortgage transition, which is how many loans have transitioned to being 30 days late. And a year ago, that rate was about 3%. Now, and it kind of huddled between COVID right during that time, also because of forbearances and other things. In the last quarter alone, it bumped up about 0.5 point. And it's nearing its way closer to 4%, which again is bringing it back to where we were pre-COVID. I'll give you an idea. 2008, 9, 10, that number was up around 12%. It was skyrocketing. We're back more towards COVID. Now, pre-COVID, it was about 5.5, and then dropped down to under 4. Again, things typically float back to the mean. I think it's got another point to go up. But the fact that it's transitioned and who's it hitting the hardest is those 18 to 29. So those who are the youngest are getting hit the hardest. Why? Because they typically aren't making as much as somebody who's been in a business for been working for 20 years, and taxes, insurance, and other things have gone up significantly. So I think that's something we continue to watch as well. And along with that, defaults, where I think they're going to come up. Another thing just talk about is, again, overall revolving debt and credit card debt. Pre-COVID, that number was roughly $700-800 billion. Now it's floating about $1.1 trillion. It has been historically, 2003, across the spectrum up through 2020, pretty consistent, probably between $600-700+ billion. Ever since interest rates spiked, that has now gone up well over $1 trillion. So the other interesting thing that I looked at was credit scores and credit scores at mortgage origination. During COVID, the average credit score, basically the 10th percentile was like 680, 25th percentile, 730, 50th percentile, close to 800. Those have gone down about a 5% drop. And again, they're back to levels seen 2015, 16, 17. So when you look at all these charts, you have this from 2020 Q1 to 2024, essentially, you have this huge blip where either things went really high for the good or down for the good. And now everything during that time is floating back to the surface of where it historically is. Now, people say, okay, so does that mean things might just shake out similar to what they were back then? I think what, again, people need to look at is, and this is why, again, I think we're going to see that increase in defaults, is everything is so much more expensive today than it was, and really salaries have not kept up. And the job market is considered to be the best, one of the best it's ever been in unemployment rates. If unemployment goes up, which a lot of people predict it will, and compensation does not start to catch up, it could cause some pain. And I think we're going to start to see, again, that uptick in defaults will continue next year, which as a default note fund, we already see ample opportunity. I think it's just going to be more ample opportunity that we're going to see. So as we wrap up this episode, what are some of the areas of concern? If I'm an investor, I invest. Where do I see concern? What would concern me? where am I not investing this year? And this is not financial advice. I am not an accountant, CPA, financial advisor. I'm just giving you my two cents for what I look at. I, over the last several years, have consistently, you know, between my wife and I, gone to some more conservative investments within our portfolio. And what does that mean? Things that don't have a lot of leverage. Leverage amplifies a situation, whether good or bad. You've seen it in both aspects of real estate. Pre-COVID and during beginning COVID, interest rates are low. It's great. It caused a huge spike in values. People have a ton of equity. And when rates spiked, all of a sudden, if you have investment property, your debt service has increased significantly. It might outpace the rents. Now you're losing money. Multifamily, perfect example. We've seen tons of multifamily deals go sour. So I look at risk, and the thing I measure risk is by the debt service and understanding I want to invest in something that's not heavily debt ridden. I've mentioned this last year and I was wrong, and I'm going back to the well and probably going to be prove myself wrong again. But I believe that we will see cracks in several asset classes of real estate. I think short-term rental, where it is not a class A location, you know, location, location, location. I believe people will start to, the operating costs continue to increase, taxes, insurance, electrical, all that stuff. People who underwrote only for a short-term rental, especially in an area that really isn't a vacation spot, I think you'll start to see some of that struggles there. I think you're going to also see struggles in some of the class B and C rental markets, which eventually might impact class A, because there's a lot of inventory coming online. I think rents are going to come down slightly. And with rents coming down, I think that's going to, and interest rates not having major impacts, I think that's going to put more pressure on some of those asset classes. And again, it goes back to what's your debt service? Because if your debt service is high, that's going to be problematic. The one I went to last year, and I'll go back to again, seller financing. The seller financing space that had LTVs over 90%, I think it's a ticking time bomb waiting to happen, where there's right way to do seller financing. And I know a lot of people are doing it wrong because they were able to get their hands on a property, increase the price by 30,000-40,000. That's property's not worth that value. And I do see that day coming, which we saw it with contract for deeds 5-6 years ago, where people had these performing contract for deeds and they all started just going into default. And nobody wanted to touch them, and they sold at a significant discount because they were not underwritten properly and people didn't want to touch them. Perfect example I'll just share briefly. I saw someone recently talking about, had a note in New York that they were trying to get somebody to service it because they needed to go after the borrower, and nobody will touch it because of the laws. They're like, we're not touching it. So this person's stuck and really can't do anything. So that other area, that seller financing side, I think you'll see. And then the last area that I think is going to be interesting that people got to be careful of is that fix and flip market. Things are taking longer to be on the market, taking longer to get built. It's costing a little bit more money. Your cost of money, again, if you're borrowing, gets amplified. And we've already this year started to see a significant uptick in defaults. I was reviewing a company recently who does a lot of fix and flip loans, and I can't name this company, but if I wrote their name on a piece of paper and stuck it and buried it in the ground and dug it up in 3 years, I'm pretty confident that that company will not be around based off of how I see them operating. And it's one of those areas where it's just the underwriting, and when people have money to lend or to spend, what's interesting sometimes what they do with it. And to me, I'm not the person who knows it all. And I'm just a person just like all of you, put my socks on the same way every morning and so forth. But I've been around, I think, a little bit. And sometimes when I see something that just doesn't look right, in the past, my gut has been pretty good on it. So I think that's another, again, market where they're now called residential transition loans, which are really hard money loans. There's good loans that you can give, and there's not so good loans, and people seeing loan to costs of 90, 100% and elsewhere. I'm starting to see some of the bigger players start to look great, some of this non-performing stuff. And really, once you get behind the curtain, how well are they doing? So those are my 2025 predictions. I will add another that I always do as a company. We're going to hit 1,000 investors. We're going to top and have over 1,000 investors by the end of next year within our fund. And that is where I'm going to leave it. So I just want to say to everyone, thank you for listening or watching this video. Hope you all have a happy, safe holiday season and new year. Take care. Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.